This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 7. How many of us chew gum? The answer is almost all of us. How many of us know what it is? The answer is almost none of us. We've been chewing on gum for 4,000 years, but today's gum isn't what it used to be. In fact, it isn't gum at all. Gum chewing transcends culture and geography. It's so popular that in the city of Toronto alone, there's an estimated 2,000 tons of gum stuck to the sidewalk, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. For such a small thing, it really adds up. I'm Celine McKay, and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast. Welcome. Thanks for joining me. This week, I'm talking with Canadian film director Andrew Nisker of Take Action Films. Andrew's latest film, it's brand new, it just came out this fall, is called Dark Side of the Chew. And yes, it's about gum. Gum is actually the second most common form of litter in the world after cigarette butts. And those little black globs on the sidewalk cost cities around the world millions of dollars to clean up every year, and are a major source of pollution in our water system. Gum has its origin in chicle, a harmless tropical tree sap that's harvested much like maple syrup. Now, it's made of plastic, and it never really biodegrades. Despite the global impact of gum chewing, it's rarely talked about, at least not that I've heard. In this episode, Andrew and I talk through some of what makes gum so nasty. It's really interesting stuff, but it's only the tip of the iceberg. You really need to watch Andrew's film to get the whole story. But, this is arguably the best part of Andrew's film, it's not all doom and gloom. Personally, I don't like feeling panicked and hopeless, as often happens when digging into environmental problems. Andrew, who used to work with Saturday Night Live, uses his comedic chops to give the film a light, fun-loving feeling. It knocks you down, but it picks you right back up, full of hope for our gum-loving culture. So, let's dive in. Here's Andrew. So, by way of introduction, can you tell us a bit about your background? How did you become the inquisitive environmentalist that you are today?
I started making documentaries back in film school a long time ago, and I was a comedy writer also, and when I graduated from film school, I had a development deal with Broadway Video, the producers of Saturday Night Live, and I produced some feature films through them, but I'm like a Gemini, but I'm not a Gemini. I've got two sides to me. I have the serious side and the funny side. And, when I was writing the comedy, I'm also very interested in social issues from a younger age. I was born, with a lot of health issues. I was an asthmatic. I still am an asthmatic. And so environmental concerns were always at the top of my list because to me, a lot of my asthma is triggered by environmental issues. And so through making films, I thought I could make a difference. In terms of obviously cleaning up the environment, making the world a healthier place for me and now for my children. So the comedy writing evolved, and I decided just to switch back into making documentaries and using my comedic chops to sort of tell these tough environmental stories that nobody really wants to hear. And so we put a spin. For example, on the first story, which was my film Garbage, The Revolution Starts at Home, I was just sickened by the sight of the garbage strike that was happening here in Toronto at the time, back in 2002. Near my house, garbage was piled up in the parks, and I just started, made me very self-conscious. I started to think about, like, where does all this stuff come from? Because when you're confronted with it, everyone's garbage. If you've never been to a landfill before, it can be very unsettling. So that sort of sickening feeling, I thought, wow, if I could capture that and put that in a movie, maybe that'll inspire people to start to think about how much they consume, because it certainly changed the way my view was on consumption. Because before that moment, I'd never really thought about what I bought and how it affected the environment. And after that moment, after living through that garbage strike, it changed my, the way I felt about all the things around me that I could buy, consume, and throw away. And after that moment, that led me down the path of making more films. And this newest film, the new film, The Dark Side of Chew, is really came out of the research from garbage, where I discovered that chewing gum is actually the second most common form of litter in the world after cigarette butts.
I haven't seen Garbage, but I really want to. If the conclusions that you come to as a result of that film are sort of the same place that I am too. So if someone was interested in seeing that, where could they go?
GarbageRevolution.com has that film for rent, so they can watch it there. They can also catch our other film, Chimerical, which came after Garbage, on ChemicalNation.com. So anyways, we can get to that film in a minute, but...
Yeah, super, absolutely. So, I wanted to sort of mention before I dig into the questions I have is that I wanted to say that I truly appreciated how you gave Dark Side of the Chew a light, sometimes even comic angle. So it's funny that you mentioned, I didn't know that your background was partially in comedy, so that makes a little bit of sense now. But truly, I think environmental issues are too often embroiled in fear, or the issue at hand is so massive it leads to those apathetic tendencies of burying your head in the sand or denying that one person can make a difference. But I felt that your film took a different approach, and I appreciated that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so one of the reasons I was so attracted to the film was because I'd never really heard anyone else talk about gum from an environmental angle. It's funny because it's so obvious, but, I just don't hear it talked about. And another was because I feel like this is actually an area that an individual can make a difference. I mean, chewing gum is completely elective. We don't need it to survive, although some might argue that. And it boils down to individual choice. So I know it's still tough given how pandemic gum chewing is, but still, what made you, you said that you were interested in gum because of your previous film on garbage, but did you chew gum before?
I couldn't say I'm not one of those people who chews gum all the time. I mean, once in a blue moon I would chew gum. It wasn't something I really, as a kid, of course. I mean, I love gumballs and Big League Chew and, the hockey cards with that gum that had flavor for 30 seconds. And I mean, that's part of growing up is being exposed to those candies. And, for me, my films are about really making people realize that it can be fun. It doesn't have to be a drag, dealing with these issues, and also fun to watch and fun to actually make a difference, and that you can make a difference. And that's what my mentor taught me, Bob Hunter, who was the co-founder of Greenpeace. Bob had a mantra, it's the revolution starts at home. And so we made our film Garbage. I actually call Garbage, the revolution starts at home, because the fact is that, if we can't rely on governments and corporations to make huge changes, it really comes down to the individual. And if the individual stops supporting polluting companies, then they'll disappear and the landscape will change. And that in turn will also cause a shift in public policy, because people won't be voting for governments like our present government, that's supporting an old fuel type, an old economy, that we have to move into the new economy of sustainability.
That's so true. And I hope that more and more come to that same conclusion quickly.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, gum.
Yeah.
In your film, you effectively communicate that almost everybody chews it and that almost nobody knows what it is.
That's
to
right.
me, that's pretty freaky. I really can't think of many other things that people would literally chew for hours without knowing what it is. Yeah, so I have a whole series of questions I wanted to ask about what modern gum actually is. But before we dive into that, could you explain where the origins of gum chewing come from and how did it become this globally shared habit?
Gum chewing, or chewing anything, has been around for, we think, since the beginning of time. We've chewed on everything from... sticks to sap from trees, spruce, pine tar, as they called it, wax. And in our film, we went and saw the world's oldest found pieces of gum that were actually fossilized. They have teeth marks on them, and they're made from spruce sap. And so, it's nothing new. It's sort of when gum was turned into sort of this mass-marketed commodity that it kind of took over the world, so to speak, and everyone kind of got hooked on chewing it. And it was masterfully marketed. And it's also something that people, it does relax you because you're chewing on something. I mean, you could be chewing on a steak, too, and that would relax you. But it's something you're constantly chewing on, and it has that effect. So, when you look at the modern chewing gum, it's not really the real deal. The real deal is what we were chewing pre-synthetic gum base. And so the synthetic gum base that we're chewing now is made up of a host of polymers, which are plastics, which are made from oil, which we were just talking about before. And those are covered with artificial flavors and sweeteners. Before, like the original chewing gum was actually made from chicle. And I'm talking about the original mass marketed chewing gum. Gum that, was mainly sold, the gum that mainly sold were made from chicle. People also sold, wax type of gums too. But the popular ones that Wrigley's and Adams that made popular were made from chicle, which came from the rainforests, mine rainforests, were harvested, and kind of like maple syrup would be harvested, and boiled and vulcanized, turned into a rubber-like substance, and sugars and flavors were added to it, and that was pretty nice packaging, and that's the way it became such a popular product. And then gums were sort of customized for different, gums for kids, gums for adults, and it was the shift when basically after the war years where gum chewing became so popular that, the demand outstripped the supply, and that's when the gum companies created this formulation of artificial gum base, and that's what we chew today. And that's where, like you said, most people don't know that, and that's where the environmental issues start to happen too.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, do you know how old that piece of fossilized gum was?
It was 4,000 years old.
Holy, yeah. Wow. So yeah, this is pretty deeply ingrained, this habit of ours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you think about things in a natural way, because I know you do, it's what you do, but if you chew, pine tar or spruce gum, after a few minutes, it turns hard in your mouth.
Yeah.
And so that's, to me, the natural way to chew. You chew for a couple minutes and you spit it out. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's where health problems lie, where you're chewing gum for hours and hours and it just never hardens. And that's where you can run into a lot of health problems, from your own standpoint. But when it comes to the environment, the other thing too is if you spit out those natural gums, like chicle, they return back to, they biodegrade. If you spit out a piece of plastic, you know what happens to that piece of plastic. It doesn't biodegrade. So there's the big difference.
Yeah, certainly. And I definitely want to talk about that environmental side in a little bit. But you touched on this super briefly, and I just wanted to touch on it again. I don't chew a lot of gum, mostly because it's a side effect of my chosen career, like you said. But I have to admit, I kind of like chewing gum. And there's actually a real reason for that. We're kind of hardwired to like chewing. So could you expand a bit further on that?
Well, I just think that, chewing anything, causes, can physically transform you and have physiological effects of relaxing you. Because you're moving your jaw and it's stimulating your certain muscles. We're not getting too scientific. That they cause you to relax. But beyond that, from what we found, a lot of the science that's been thrown out there that gum chewing makes you concentrate better You know, it's good for your health in a lot of respects. I'm finding that it's dubious at best because it's coming from, a lot of it's coming from the gum manufacturers themselves. And without ruining my film too much, but we did our own mini experiment with the film, and what we discovered really wasn't fully truthful as towards what a lot of the marketers are saying about what gum can do for you. So it was really interesting to figure that out. And, you know, constantly chewing on something can cause a lot of problems, you know, TMJ, which means your jaw gets, your muscles get sore, you get that from grinding the teeth, and there's other, you know, and so it's probably not the best thing to overdo, but what is good to overdo, you know? In moderation,
right.
It's probably not going to kill you, but, you know, the fact is that the way they are designed, gums are designed today, so if you just mindlessly sit there and chew and chew and chew.
Yeah, I know. You could literally chew one piece of gum for like 2 hours and it still tastes fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
And that's kind of weird. Yeah. You also have to question that too. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Like, what is this mysterious substance in my mouth?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. You know, we're using all sorts of natural things. And you know that natural products, they just don't, they don't, the scent doesn't last. Rightfully so, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And nor do some other properties like elasticity when it comes to gum.
Yeah, and what's funny is that good gum is judged on how long it lasts. The longer, the better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Again, another marketing point.
Yeah, exactly.
You see similar things when it comes to cleaning products, you know?
Yes,
that smells wonderful. It smells like lemons. It smells like kiwi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we're all of a sudden we're walking around and we're smelling like a bowl of tropical fruit. It's really not the way we should be smelling. We don't need to be stinking either, but we, you know, it's just bizarre. You know, how we're sold and to believe, we're rewired to think that if I smell that, you know, lemons, then I know that it's clean. But
yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, my personal quest is what you put on your skin. So, you know, cosmetics or lotions, and I'm always so shocked, you know, people put lotion, it literally covers every inch of your body, and that's going into your blood, and that's scary, but it just amazes me how many people I talk to that are just like, oh, well, I like it, so whatever.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, you know, it slowly bioaccumulates, so, if it went on your skin and burned your skin, then you wouldn't be using it, but there's a tipping point, and what we try to do, like in our film Chimerical, where we had a family get rid of all their cleaning products and personal care products and investigated cosmetics, is get people to see that, you know, this stuff is kind of invisible. It's out there, and it's going into your skin. It's going into your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it, like you said, and try and find something that's more transparent. You know, it's firstly, you know what's in it. And second of all, that you're using it in a way that isn't going to affect you down the road.
Yeah.
So, but I think people are slowly really waking up to this. I saw some major cosmetic manufacturers are starting to pull out some ingredients yesterday. I saw an announcement. So that's good. But we made that film like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that's what I started. I mean, it was even before that. But that's a whole other. I feel like we could do a whole other show. I should have you back on. We can talk about that
next
time.
Sure. Oh, yeah. We can have a chat. Chimerical is still a very popular film. We have, you know, hundreds of requests to watch that film per year, and it's fun.
Oh, that's great.
So it's you know, as you can see, the green market is slowly growing, but there's still a huge way to go. People are slowly waking up with that they're, you know, the products that they're buying are not necessarily good for them.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I'm really glad that your film's having such a positive response and people are listening to what you have to say. That's wicked. Yeah. So you touched on earlier that gum is a series, it's just polymers and different stuff. Basically, it's plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty serious yuck. But one of the things that gum also contains is aspartame.
Yep.
So what are the actual physical side effects of consuming that? Because, I mean, it's more stuff than just that. It's a pretty widely consumed chemical. And so, as well, is that the worst that gum contains?
Well, lots of gums don't contain that, obviously. And, you know, when it comes to using artificial flavors and sweeteners, I personally just try to steer away from using them, period. And I'm finding them a lot in different products, the chalky, like children's vitamins, children's cough syrups for my own children. And I just can't believe, you know, when they say, oh, these are sugar-free, it's good for your kid. Well, it's filled with artificial flavors and sweeteners. Like, I'd rather have the kid have the sugar than have the chemical.
And
so when it comes to chewing gum, you know, there's many, many, many people who feel that there's a huge controversy around the artificial flavors and sweeteners. So we just pointed that out in the film, that that's just one other questionable ingredient that you're putting in your body, and it's really up to you to take a look and see how, you know, how you stand in that whole debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how I'm pretty sure you touched on that when it goes into your body, it disassociates and becomes partly formaldehyde.
Yeah.
So, like, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that science is pretty, it's pretty ugly. And, you know, and the other thing is that I also want people to focus on the 360 view of chewing gum.
Yep.
That it's also the packaging, too, right? That's garbage. Mm-hmm. You can't recycle it. So you're chewing something that's a pollutant, and you're getting into the packaging that's going completely to landfill. So it's like the overall product needs definite improvement, from packaging to formulation of the product itself, from the polymers to the artificial sweeteners to the packaging itself. So mm-hmm. So this is a wake-up call, we hope, to people to start to put pressure on the companies to make a difference. And then I guess you want to talk about the pollution aspect of it.
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the you know, that's another thing too. People don't realize, because it's so small, they're just flicking it on the ground, that the impact that it has.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked to know that it's the most universally accepted form of litter. That's always flabbergasted me. It's crazy. And so I know you've touched on that gum doesn't biodegrade and that there's packaging waste. Is there anything else that are there any other main environmental concerns about gum, or are those the two major ones?
Well, I think gum is part of that subcategory of plastic waste, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up when it's clean. Well, first of all, when you spit the gum on the sidewalk, It sticks to the sidewalk, and the cost to remove it is usually a few times more than the cost of the actual manufacture of the gum. And that's simply because you need to have special equipment. You're using hot water, steam, or chemical, or you can use dry ice type machines that will freeze the gum and chip it off the sidewalk. But either way, when the gum is removed, at least from what I saw in London and here in Toronto, I was with a crew in London, England, where they clean on Oxford Street. 10 months of the year, they're cleaning on Oxford Street. And they spend a few million pounds a year cleaning Oxford Street.
Yeah,
and
wow.
When it's scraped off the sidewalk, and all that energy and manpower is being used to get the gum off the sidewalk, it ends up floating down into the storm sewer. And if it's Toronto, for example, if it goes into the storm sewer, it goes directly into the lake. And so it's adding to the plastic pollution problem in the Great Lakes. And once plastic's floating in the water, it acts like a sponge. It absorbs toxins in the water and then fish mistake it for food because it breaks into microparticles and it gets into the food chain. And so, it's just ugly. So the fact is that, the goal really is to have this film raise awareness about how much impact that pollution has and get people to dispose of it properly. First of all, mm-hmm. get the gum companies to create better formulations, although they've claimed that they've spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars over the last, you know, few decades, and they still haven't figured out how to create a biodegradable gum. Because the biggest challenge, of course, is if you're chewing gum, you got to make sure it doesn't biodegrade in your mouth first. So
yeah.
If it doesn't biodegrade in your mouth, but it biodegrades on the sidewalk, it's kind of tough to figure out what that formulation would be, because your mouth is probably one of the harshest environments on the planet, right?
Right.
And so that's been the biggest challenge. I mean, they've even at some one point diverged from that and tried to create a non-stick sidewalk. So, you know, and you know, it's really a mystery. And we went as far in the film to do a survey in Toronto to see how much gum there is stuck up to the sidewalks.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know more about that.
Well, we used a mapping technology by ESRI Canada. They're a GIS, Global Information Systems, inventor, pioneer. And they stepped up and said, no, we can help you figure out the solution because our work is environmental work. We do tons of environmental mapping. And we took samples from sidewalks in specific locations in the city, and we cross-referenced them by taking photographs of those portions of the sidewalk using our phones. And that's where we actually even came up with an app that everybody can use that we talk about, and I encourage people to come check out. And the app allows users to take a photo of the sidewalk, and then the technology actually scans the photo. And what you end up with is a figure comes up that shows you what percentage of that photograph has gum in it. And that photograph itself, because it's geotagged when you take the photograph, is uploaded onto a global map. And so we're essentially creating a user-generated map of gum pollution globally, which has never been done before. And in Toronto, we determined through averaging, that there's about 719 million pieces of gum stuck to the sidewalk.
Holy.
And so
that's
2,000 tons of gum.
Oh, my gosh.
And that, some of that gum could, you know, gum can be there for 20 years, you know. And who knows who's responsible for that gum, you know. But the fact is that, you know, it's a major problem, and during the course of making this film in every city, obviously, I'm hyper-gum aware, so I looked at the sidewalks in Helsinki, sidewalks in Mexico City, here in Toronto, in London, in Wales, and the problem is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, that's why I kind of played off having fun with The Blob, you know, the idea of that 60s horror movie, The Blob, that's taking over the world. Well, you know, that's why our poster is like this giant pink blob covering the planet.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that it is like a giant pink blob. You know, it's building up, and it's invisibly going into our watershed and into our environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, that really struck me when I watched your film, that whole segment, you know, how much cities spend in terms of time, money, and resources to deal with that gum litter. And I don't know why I've never thought about that, because, I mean, of course, if that wasn't being dealt with, there'd be an inch of gum everywhere.
That's right. You'd have some sticky shoes.
Yeah, I mean, subways, railings, I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah,
so
we're not even looking under desks.
Yeah, exactly.
These are sidewalks statistics, you know?
Yeah, so that app is awesome. So then you're hoping that people will adopt it and sort of give you data from around the world.
Yeah, we want people to, you know, this is a part of take action, you know? Let's participate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Use your phones, contribute to that data. We're hoping schools, when they show the films to their students, that the students take their, you know, take their phones and they go out as a field trip and go and document the gum pollution around their schools. And believe me, gum pollution around schools is pretty wild. Like, we were in New York, and you know, if you stand outside the main gate where kids leave school, it looks like, you know, there was a Christmas gum party. It's like gum spew everywhere. So, and you see it in specific regions when you really think about it. Like at nightclubs, if you go down to a nightclub district during the day, you can see where the lineup was because of the gum splatter pattern on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, the evidence is there.
The last couple of questions I had for you, you've given us a lot to chew on. Yeah, I couldn't help it. My husband actually was just like, you have to say that.
I didn't burst your bubble, right?
Yeah. So, you know, you've said it's bad for our bodies, it's bad for the earth, but you end the film somewhat hopefully, which I also really, really appreciated, because it aggravates me when, you know, environmental issues leave you high and dry, feeling totally hopeless.
No, always a silver lining.
So what were some of the solutions you uncovered, and what do you think is the future of gum chewing?
Well, I mean, Chicle, we actually went down to Mexico and went to a community that harvests Chicle. And Chicle harvesting was huge back, you know, beforehand, when it was supplying Chicle to essentially the American gum market, you know, 100 years ago. And now it's coming back. And so, kind of like 10 years ago, you never thought about the chocolate you ate. And then word got out that, when you buy a chocolate bar for 99 cents, it's really not chocolate, it's candy. If you want real chocolate, you've got to pay a premium for that. And I think that the world, I hope, will start to wake up from this film. It'll be a game changer, I hope, for the gum industry, that they'll wake up and realize that, you know, they're not chewing the real deal, that they were sold back, the formulation was changed. And so, Chick-fil-A will hopefully rise up again, but there's no way in the world that source will be able to supply the demand globally. And so, obviously, but even replacing traditional gum in a way with Chick-fil-A, based gum, will have somewhat of an impact. But the main thing, I think, is people's behavior. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to litter, don't litter chewing gum, because it costs, the environmental damage it does is too much. The costs are enormous. And, you look at oil spills, that cost is enormous. I mean, when you look at just inspiring people, when they finally understand that those black dots on the sidewalks, that's what it is. Here's the cost behind it. Don't spit it out. Put it in garbage. We'll make a big difference. So that's an important message. And I know it sounds like a small message, it's a bit goofy, but the fact is that globally, the cumulative effect will be pretty massive. And the exciting part about it, and the reason I picked chewing gum, the number one reason, is I could have done cigarette butts, which is the number one problem. I did chewing gum because it's a great story to tell kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
for sure.
You know, if we can get them engaged and hooked in a film like this at a young age, it's just another reinforcement, another tool to create a next generation of people who are a lot more environmentally sensitive and care about our planet. And we'll do the right thing. Because we're doing a little bit better than our parents. And I think we could be doing a lot better. Hopefully our kids will be doing even better than us.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you chose gum instead of cigarette butts, because cigarettes, like smoking, it's already something that everyone accepts is bad for you. I mean, even people who smoke know it's bad for you. They just choose not to care. And so, but gum is different. I don't think, people just don't think about it that way. It is just something everybody does.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you took that angle for sure. Yeah, and I'm surprised too. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed about environmental issues and trying to negotiate change is that cost often has, that's like your weigh-in. That's how you get like the average person to listen. And so I'm surprised that cities haven't undertaken sort of campaigns to reduce gum litter or educate people on, you know, on not littering with gum. It's sort of surprising to me.
Yeah. Well, I think cities have had smaller campaigns, but I mean, you know, it depends where priorities lie, right? Again, even just getting people to not litter, I don't know if you ever watched the show Mad Men, but I'm not that old, but, you know, if from what I could see, you know, three generations ago, people littering, never thought about it. They just,
And
one of the most successful anti-litter campaigns, Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute, really change people's perceptions of their relationship with that trash. And so, but it's these innocuous things like chewing gum that people just don't think of. So that's why this is kind of a surprise to people. I mean, it was a hell of a challenge to sell this idea because it didn't seem like it was serious enough.
Really? Wow.
Well, you know, at first glances, it looked like, wow, a film about chewing gum, you got to be kidding me, like, chewing gum pollution.
Yeah.
And we didn't want it to just be a film about pollution either. We just wanted it to be a film about, you know, more than that. And I think we've achieved that. And we, you know, it's also part of the entertainment value of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an incredible business story in itself, too.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, literally, they've taken this thing and become, it's worldwide.
Yeah.
It's pandemic.
Yeah. And it was the first real item that was mass marketed, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, the rules of marketing were written, the marketing handbook was really written by Adams and Wrigley.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And the tobacco companies followed suit. I mean, if you look at the way tobacco was sold in the post-war years, it was sold, or even before then, it was sold as something as a health, something good for your health, according to the tobacco companies.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever seen that commercial with the Flintstones and Fred gives Barney a, Barney's not feeling good, and Fred gives him a cigarette to make him feel better because he's feeling
good. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen that.
So, I mean, that's how, you know, doctors were encouraged to prescribe carton cigarettes to their patients if they weren't feeling well.
Yeah.
If you got a sore throat, smoke.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
That's
right. Well, it's nice then that if that was the time period where they started really mass marketing that, then we've come a fairly long distance, I would say, then in that period of time. So hopefully the evolution is starting for gum too. So I was curious, have you tried Chicksa gum? That's the brand you talk about in the film, isn't it?
Yeah. I was in the factory manufacturing it. I harvested it. I mm-hmm. chewed it. It's absolutely scrumptious and, the flavor doesn't last very long, but it's definitely a really nice chew, and it's you can taste the difference. Just like I always, I can always taste the difference between something that's organically grown and not. So
right, of course.
It's got a better feel to it, so.
Mm-hmm.
But you can really taste the difference in this gum. So.
I had previously done this research as well, but I just wanted to see if there's anything else new in terms of natural gum. And I did find something new, and I didn't know if you'd heard of it. It's called Simply Gum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from New York. And I really liked it because they've got an excellent branding message, but it looks exciting. You know, it looks like, wow, that looks so good. I want to try it. So you should check it out if you haven't heard of it.
I've heard of it. And,
have you?
I've seen it. And you're familiar with the term greenwashing, right?
Oh, no, really?
No, I'm not saying Simply Gum is greenwashing.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that call them up and find out what percentage of the gum base is made of chiclet.
Oh, really?
Because just figure, like, maybe it says on their packaging. But, you know, there are gum manufacturers out there that say, our gum is a chiclet gum. But if you call them and ask them, what percentage of your gum is made of chiclet, they won't tell you.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm on their website now. It says that there's 6 ingredients and that's it. So I don't know.
What are the ingredients?
Chicle, organic, dry cane juice, organic vegetable glycerin, which is probably a big one, organic sunflower lecithin, organic rice flour, and all natural flavor.
Perfect. So that probably is. You could call them and ask them because they don't have to disclose it. But I know that Chicksa is 100% chicle because I've been there and I've had the product. I'm just saying if that particular gum that you're talking about, if that's if that is what it is, that's fantastic. But don't be fooled if other gums are marketed and say that they're made, you know, that they're made with chiclet because they could be made with 1% chiclet and the rest of it is artificial gum base.
Yeah, well, it goes back to cosmetics again. You could say it's natural if there's water in there.
That's right, exactly.
Like, good. Scary stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? I am going to do some more research and I'll follow up on that on our blog because I'm curious. Because there's another one that I know of called Glee as well. And that one seems a bit more dubious to me. I don't know why.
All about.
I need to. Yeah, exactly. I will. Okay, so you mentioned your plans for the film. It's going to be on TVO, but that's fairly local. A lot of my listenership is in the U.S. as well. Do you have plans to sort of, is it going to...
We are in talks with some networks in the U.S., and we will probably make it digitally available in the spring in the U.S. Through our website, darksideofthechew.com. My other films are available on, if you go to takeactionfilms.com, you can see them there, and you can rent them through our websites at chemicalnation.com, garbagerevolution.com, and orangewitness.com.
Okay.
So, but anyways, hopefully you'll put that up on your blog. And
I will.
And yeah. We're slowly rolling out Dark Side of the Chew. And we're going to be hosting some, if there's anybody out there in any community that would like us to bring the film to the community and have me come and present the film, please contact us. We would love to, I love doing that. I love going out and presenting the film and speaking to communities about it.
Okay.
And we can also do, they can also purchase the film, we can send it to them, but I can do it via Skype too. I'm happy to do a post-film discussion via Skype, so.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll definitely, every episode has some detailed show notes and links and all that kind of stuff. So I'll definitely notate all that stuff so that people can find it easily.
Incredible.
So thank you so very much. I've enjoyed our talk and I look forward to staying connected and maybe doing some follow-up interviews too.
Celine, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
So that concludes my talk with Andrew. I hope it inspired you, and I hope you'll share it with your family and friends. This episode is originally airing on Boxing Day, so I wanted to personally wish you the happiest of holidays and thank you for your support of Pure Green in 2014. If you wanted to re-listen to any part of the show or look up any of the resources we talked about, you can do that at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Andrew. I ask that if you enjoyed today's episode, please go over to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a rating for the show. It's the biggest and nicest way you can show your support and help us grow. This podcast is created by Pure Green Magazine. Go to puregreenmag.com to pick up a copy of our latest issue or to subscribe. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.